My name is Leonidas, and this is Informed Dissent.
What's up, guys? Welcome to episode 27 of Informed Dissent, the podcast where we push back against the culture of groupthink, challenge, and narrative. I hope everyone is doing well. So, I've been reading a lot of Booker T. Washington lately, and I just finished his autobiography, Up From Slavery, which I highly recommend if you haven't read it. And I really wanted to center this episode around that. Not so much the book itself, but the essence of it. And the fact that we currently live in an entirely different universe than the one that existed in 1901. When that book was published. The themes that are grappled with are the same things that we're grappling with today. Freedom, self-control, manhood, work ethic, personal responsibility, education, culture. These things we pretty much discuss every episode on this podcast. And it has nothing to do with race. Not really. These are universal issues. And Washington, of course, was largely focused on what he viewed as lifting up the Negro race. And there is still a need for that in 2021. But the concepts are bigger than that. And they're lessons that need to be learned by all people of all races. They encapsulate the human condition and what has inspired people to excel to the highest heights for generations. I don't know where we went wrong, but we have lost something profound along the way, and with it, our sense of perspective and gratitude. What I found most striking about Booker T. Washington's attitude, having been born into slavery and elevated himself through tremendous perseverance and sacrifice, is his general positive outlook and his sense of self-determinism, that a man is wholly capable of making something of himself if he is willing to put in the effort. Now, this is an utterly foreign concept in our modern society, where handouts and entitlements are the standard and failures or struggles are blamed on other people or some external system. It's baffling that people who live in the abundance and endless opportunity that exists in America could feel more victimized and more hampered by external factors than someone who was literally born into slavery and who managed to build a wildly successful school in the South at the height of racism. The disconnect is incredible. Booker T. Washington was focused mostly on education, as made clear by his establishment and work with the Tuskegee Institute. And even from an early age, he understood that this was the key. He recounted as a child, while still in slavery, how he saw children studying in a little schoolhouse. And he thought that being able to study in that way would be like being admitted to paradise. As we stand in 2021, we see that not only has education become a toxin to our society instead of an elixir like it should be, but we have also lost that longing for learning. The grasp of the importance of educating oneself. And I mean real education, useful education, not a pretentious education, which is what we've begun to see in academia, because that swings the pendulum too far, and we have plenty of that as well. We have a group of people who see no value in educating themselves, no value in reading books, no value in learning skills or trades or bettering themselves whatsoever, and that is a huge problem. Then we also have people who we could call overeducated. And these are the arrogant, elitist, social science PhDs who have somehow confused education for wisdom. Not all, of course, but enough to be a problem. And unfortunately, it's become even our hard science people who allow politics to cloud their objectivity. Both are toxic to our society. All are toxic to our society. I think Washington understood that education was about improving oneself and making yourself useful to those around you so that you can lift others up and leave the world a better place than you found it. That is certainly his legacy, and it's one we should all seek to follow. You know, it's a bit of cruel irony when you see that many of the schools that bear his namesake are abysmal failures. And one of the things Thomas Sowell talks about is in his advocacy for charter schools is that successful schools not only see a desire to learn in the students, but they're disciplined. I often talk about how the social ills that exist in our society can generally be traced back to the home. And that is absolutely true. It all starts with the parents. But schools can be successful in implementing a sense of discipline and a respect for education that children may not get at home. And in fact, I think it's vital that schools do this, whether children get that at home or not. This is also why I think school choice is important, and that students be funded instead of schools, so that parents have the power to send their children to productive schools instead of failing ones. I think ultimately it was a mistake to allow the government to take control of education, and we're dealing with the consequences of that mistake today. When I look around at struggling communities and the failing schools within these communities, I see such lost potential. The tools are there. The ability is there, but it's being missed. And no matter how much money the government throws into it, it doesn't change. Baltimore school systems is one of the highest funded in the country, and it has some of the worst outcomes. Same for Detroit. This pattern is repeated in many school systems around the country. Booker T. Washington understood that a useful education and self-discipline were the most important aspects to pull people out of their destitute circumstances. It is the same today as it was then. But like I've said before, any culture that discourages these things, a culture that disregards education, a culture that embraces blame shifting and an external locus of control, that is a culture of failure. And it should be utterly rejected by anyone who is serious about helping people escape their circumstances. We live in the United States of America. It is truly, truly a land of opportunity. If a former slave can do it in the postbellum South, I promise you, no matter what your race, you can do it too. Another theme in Washington's autobiography is, of course, freedom. Freedom is a broad topic, but it is an extremely important one. I think that goes without saying. I don't think an episode has gone by on this podcast where I haven't discussed it. It's another thing that we have lost as a country, the importance of preserving and prioritizing liberty. That's most clearly seen in the COVID hysteria, in the subsequent authoritarianism, but it's also seen in other aspects of life where people believe it is their duty to exercise control over others in order to establish some sort of grand utopia. Our country is built on the idea that individual liberty is paramount. But it would seem to make sense that you don't really appreciate liberty until you don't have it. It's the age-old adage that you don't know what you have until it's gone. Therefore, it would be sensible to believe that a newly freed slave would appreciate the idea of liberty and want to protect it at all costs much more than someone who was born into it and never had to worry about losing it. It's like a man who crawls through the desert, exhausted and dehydrated, until he comes upon an oasis. And that water he drinks would be considered to be the greatest and most precious thing in the world to that man. He would treat it as sacred. Whereas someone who lives on an island in the middle of a lake and who has running water in their house may even reach the point of being sick of water. They'll almost certainly take it for granted. It seems that this is what has happened to our country with liberty. We've taken it for granted, so that all it takes is just a little bit of fear and we willingly sacrifice it. I can't imagine a newly freed slave like Booker T. Washington embracing the idea of giving up his liberty in exchange for a promise of safety. He, more than anyone, along with the rest of those who endured bondage, had a deep understanding of and appreciation for the words life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Now, I'm in no way saying that what we're dealing with COVID or anything else is the same as being in slavery. Of course not. But I am saying that we are not being good stewards over the gift that we have been given by our ancestors, and we are squandering away our inheritance. It would be extremely poor repayment if we took a country that those who came before us sacrificed and fought and bled and even died for, if we simply turned it over to authoritarians and allowed it to be destroyed. Everything they sacrificed and fought and bled and died for would have been in vain. We must recognize the importance of liberty and do everything we can to protect it. Yes, even above the promise of safety or equality, especially above the promise of safety or equality. As the great economist Milton Friedman once put it, a society that puts equality before freedom will get neither, but a society that puts freedom before equality will get a high degree of both. That certainly applies to the quest for equality or equity. It also applies to the desire to allay fear and seek safety. These things are nowhere near important enough to justify sacrificing our liberty. Another important theme that one might feel was emphasized in a clandestine sort of way in Booker T. Washington's work is that of manhood. I don't know that he explicitly laid out his ideas on what manhood means, and maybe he did, and I'm just forgetting, but the point is that he didn't have to. Manhood is understood without explanation. You know it when you see it, or at least that's the way it used to be. It is another thing that we seem to have lost as a society. Men. And I don't mean just biological males, but I mean men who stand up as leaders and protectors, whose word is their bond, who have no patience for weakness, who will do the right thing and do whatever it takes to do it without excuse. Maybe people have different ideas of what it means to be a man. I'll not pretend like everyone will agree on the exact definition of manliness, but I don't think it can be denied that our culture has feminized men and likened manhood to a disease that needs to be eradicated. We've even reached the point where men not only believe that they can be women, but our society embraces them as women. Now listen, I'm not here to judge what you do in your personal life, but I am here to tell the truth. And biological males, men, are not women, no matter how much they want to be. It doesn't even make sense because the lines have been blurred so much that they can't even define what a woman is. How can you possibly be a woman if you can't define the word woman? We've even reached the point where we can't even say the word woman in some circles. We have to say birthing person or person with a uterus or whatever. It's awful. I've seen that some medical schools are now teaching their students that biological sex is a social construct. A social construct. How did we get here? Men are men. Women are women. And it should also be noted that women are special. And womanhood has a unique strength to it that no man could ever emulate. So it's an insult to both men and women to blur that line. Man and woman are distinctly different. Neither superior or inferior, but complementary. Our society disagrees. It prefers to turn women into men and men into women, and thus throwing off the natural balance and sending things into chaos. We need men. We need what has been deemed toxic masculinity. We need that. The truth is that the lack of masculinity in a society is far more toxic than anything else. We need men who stand up and take responsibility, who do whatever it takes to protect their family, their community, and their country. Men who are fathers, who raise up their children to be strong and resilient. And I know people don't like to hear it, but it takes men to raise men. That is not a criticism of single mothers or mothers in general, but boys need fathers. Girls need fathers too, make no mistake. But boys cannot learn how to be men without male role models. And if they don't get it from their father, they'll get it from somewhere else. And our culture does not promote the best male role models. But you've heard me discuss the statistics before on how children without fathers are more likely to end up in poverty, more likely to end up in prison, more likely to have mental illness, all sorts of things. The nuclear family is vital. Like I said, men and women are complementary, and kids need both. But I believe the man is to lead his family, not as an authoritarian dictator, but as a loving father and a protector, like God is for us. I mentioned earlier that the social ills in our society can be traced back to the home. Well, a big piece of that is a lack of men who are doing what needs to be done. It is not an accident that failing communities with high crime rates and high rates of violence coincide with high rates of single motherhood and a conspicuous lack of men. Boys are growing up in these environments without any idea of what it means to be a man, no clue whatsoever. And then they themselves have kids and either abandon them or allow them to continue the cycle of perpetual weakness and cowardice. And that's what exists in these communities, weakness and cowardice. I so wish people would begin to ostracize the degenerate culture that exists in these communities and make it clear that that's what it is. It is a culture of cowards. Cowards who have no respect for themselves and no respect for anyone else. Taking a life does not make you a man. Having kids with a bunch of women does not make you a man. Running out on those kids doesn't make you a man. Fighting people for looking at you wrong, dropping out of school, neglecting your education, giving no respect to authority, no respect for a job, no ambition, no work ethic. These are not men. A man handles his responsibilities. He has self-control. He cherishes his wife. He shows kindness to others, especially those less fortunate than himself. He respects authority. He stands up for what he believes in. He seeks to improve himself and his condition. He takes responsibility for his mistakes. He seeks to make the world a better place than he found it. He loves his children, and he raises them to do the same. That is manhood. You know, perhaps it is the civilized manner, the valor and gallantry, and the honor of the gentleman that we have truly lost. But the real question is, how do we get it back? I should probably point out that I am in no way perfect, and I don't pretend to have everything figured out. And when I say these things, I say them in an attitude of seeking perfection, not having actually achieved it. And that's really the best we can hope for, because nobody's perfect. We all mess up. We all fall short. We all let others down, let ourselves down. But we don't stay there. That's the key. We pick it up and we try again. Try to do better next time. That's something I've been trying to instill in my kids, especially my oldest, who has been having a little bit of trouble with discipline and self-control. And I try to explain to him that, look, we are flawed human beings. We're going to mess up. It's going to happen. We're going to make mistakes. But the key is that we learn from those mistakes and that we don't keep making those same mistakes over and over and over again. That's growth. That's how you grow. There's that adage about learning an instrument or some form of art or something, that the master has failed more times than the beginner has even tried. And that idea exemplifies what I mean, that failure and mistakes are a part of life. You just have to use them to learn and do better. So we've already discussed liberty, but a broader lens might look at the influence of the founding fathers in general and the influence of the founding documents on not only Booker T. Washington, but on history itself, as well as our present day circumstances. It should be noted that though people often criticize the founding fathers and the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution as being hypocritical because the institution of slavery still existed, and multiple founding fathers even owned slaves. But what people fail to understand is that had it not been for the Western ideals of liberalism, and I mean liberalism in the true sense, the sense of individual rights and liberties, if it had not been for that ideology, slavery likely would not have been abolished, at least not nearly as quickly as it was. So when people criticize these things, they don't understand that they're criticizing the very things that brought an end to an institution that was thousands of years old and was practiced all over the world, in all countries, in all cultures, with all different races of people being both slaves and slaveholders. They miss the point. Slavery in America was not unique. It was not particularly noteworthy that slavery existed in America. It existed everywhere. What was noteworthy was that it was abolished. Slavery continued to exist in the non-Western world, and abolishment was heavily resisted. White slaves were being traded in North Africa well after the Emancipation Proclamation in the U.S., No one talks about that, though. Slavery still exists in many places in Africa and the Middle East today. Today. But for some reason, we want to cling to the grievance of American slavery and use it as a scapegoat to explain all of our social ills. And I find that to be baffling. Because the Civil War ended in 1865. Booker T. Washington published his biography in 1901. He was 36 years removed from slavery when he wrote that. 36 years. And he had no interest in looking backward. No interest in holding on to slavery as a crutch or as an excuse. No interest in believing himself to be incapable because of what he had endured. Now here we are, 156 years removed from the end of the Civil War, and still blaming slavery. I know I've said it before. I talked about living in the past in the last episode, but it bears repeating anyway. History has an effect on the present. Obviously it does. It does for all of us. But your own attitudes, choices, behaviors, your outlook on life, whether or not you have an internal or external locus of control, these things have far more of an impact on your outcomes than something that happened to your grandma or your great-grandma. We need to be teaching our children that they have the power to control their own destiny. I'll say that a million times until people get it, because it's true. It's absolutely true. I don't know about you guys, but I believe we live in the greatest country in the world. The greatest country on this planet. The radical left is doing everything they possibly can to change that. But as it is, America is exceptional. I absolutely believe that. And that doesn't mean that there weren't awful things that happened in the past. I think we can acknowledge that and still recognize the amazing blessing that it is to live here and the incredible opportunities that we have that don't exist elsewhere. And you look at these places that experience true oppression, like Hong Kong, Venezuela, Cuba, and whose flag are their citizens waving? Ours. They wave the American flag as a symbol of freedom. The people in those places understand the blessings that exist in America better than many Americans do. And that's a shame. But like I said, that it doesn't mean America is perfect or that we don't have sins in our past. But it comes down to, again, perspective and gratitude. I think a lot about the story of Joseph in the Bible and how God can and does use the evil acts of humans to bring about good. Joseph was sold into slavery by his own brothers, his own family. That's about as evil as it gets. But because of that act of evil, Joseph eventually became second in command to Pharaoh in Egypt, and was able to save all the people in Egypt, as well as the people in the surrounding lands, including his own family. It would not have happened had he not been sold into slavery. In much the same way, some of my own ancestors were sold into slavery by their own people. And because of that act of evil, I have been blessed to be born right here and now in the greatest country on earth. Now, that doesn't excuse the act of evil, and it doesn't rationalize it. Don't get me wrong. But it is pointing out that good was able to come from it, and I would be extremely foolish to not be grateful for that. Okay, the last theme I want to address is the general idea of unity. This is something I've talked about at length, and that also bears constant repetition. It was Martin Luther King who said, "We must learn to live together as brothers, or else perish together as fools." It was Booker T. Washington's sincere prayer that the country would move forward toward a national unity among all people of all races. It is many people's current position that such an idea is foolish and worthless. They would prefer to remain in indignation and resentment. Again, I wonder if it is possible for a former slave to reject vengefulness toward the people who actually engaged directly in his oppression. How much more should those of us who live in abundance and prosperity far removed from the institution of slavery and anyone who was involved with it whatsoever. How much more should we be willing to abandon such negative attitudes and emotions? And again, I relate this to slavery, but it could be anything that you hold on to from the past. As I said in the last episode, such behavior is toxic and does nothing but drive bitterness and a decline in your mental and physical health. But if we are to move forward as a country, we need to find unity, and we need to let go of the anger and the resentment and the vengefulness and the divisiveness. And we need to recognize that we are one people and that our destinies are intertwined. We have so much to be thankful for here in America. So much. I try to remind myself every day how incredibly blessed we are. Because we are. It's hard to see how blessed we are to have water when we're on the island in the middle of the lake. But we are. When that national anthem plays and when that flag waves, that's what I think about. I think about the things that great men and women endured in the past so that we could have the country that we have today. We must not squander our inheritance. And it is my hope that the great men and women of the past, men like Booker T. Washington, will provide us with a constant reminder of how much we have gained and how much we have to lose. And hopefully reinstill in us an undying sense of both perspective and gratitude. Thanks for listening. I'm Leonidas, and this has been Informed Dissent.
If you would like to help support the show through donation, you can do so at donorbox.org/Leonidas. DonorBox.org/Leonidas. I really appreciate that. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe, give it a 5-star rating, share with your friends. Also, follow me on social media at Leonidas Johnson. And check out my website at LeonidasJohnson.com. And always remember, do your own research, challenge everything. Don't be afraid to stand up for what you believe. We'll see you next week. God bless.